Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence.
Hooray for Hollywood.
Why?
That screwy ballyhooey Hollywood.
Are you serious?
Where any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic.
It's my podcast and I'll make you cry if I want.
With just a good looking pan. And any barmaid can be a star maid.
Erin makes me
if
nervous,
she dances with or without a fan. Hooray for Hollywood.
The second time that you just shoved it up my nose.
Yeah, you're terrific if you're even good.
Don't start yet. I got a whole handful of goldfish to eat still.
Hello.
You can go now.
Okay, thank you. Hello, gentle listeners. It's me, your sunshine into goth ham, Benjamin, the baby brother.
And I'm Jake. I'm the middle brother. I'm the one that came up with the crazy list of comics that we read through each week.
And I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. I produce this mess. Thank you for tuning back into the Brotherhood of Batman podcast. We are three brothers who read Batman books in somewhat of a continuity order. We watch Batman movies, TV shows, and play some games and just have a genuine fun time. We have turned back in this week. I'm going last. I normally go first. But I made a beverage for this week's episode, which is NightQuest Part 4, which we read Detective Comics 671 through 673. And I sent my brothers a recipe for a drink called Hollywood. And did you guys make that?
I did.
I made very close to it. I don't have triple sec anymore because I've been drinking too many margaritas, but I substituted the triple sec for blue carousel, which basically tastes the same. It just made my drink dark purple.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, so the recipe calls for 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1.5 ounces of Chambord, which I don't know what the hell that is, but it sounded like it was like raspberry-ish, 1 ounce of triple sec, and then some sweetened lime juice. So I realized when I sent it to you, I had vodka at the time, but somehow last week I used that up without thinking that I needed it for this week. And so I actually substituted tequila for the vodka, because then I left out the Chambord. And I just replaced that with some grenadine, and I didn't have sweetened lime juice, so I used lime juice and then just your standard simple syrup. So I basically have like a sweet raspberry margarita, which probably is not at all what the beverage is supposed to be, but who cares? It tastes all right. So.
Well, I actually have Chambord, but it's like shoved in the back of my liquor cabinet, and I did not feel like digging it out, so I just used grenadine.
Nice.
Who are you, Ben? What kind of lazy?
Well, the grenadine was already on the counter from last week's drink, so I was like, I'll just use that.
So none of us really made it then. So mine is very, very sweet. So I used margarita mix instead of the sweet lime juice, which I felt that was basically the same thing. And then the blue carousel and then grenadine. And then my vodka is actually vanilla vodka.
Oh, gross.
I'm basically just drinking sugar. It's good.
If you want to know what a Hollywood cocktail tastes like, do not replicate any of what we made, because none of us are even close.
Go make your own and let us know what it tastes like.
You can do that on any of our socials, so you know where to find us. If you're still listening.
All right, so yeah, we're going to do a special Weekend Geek because I think our baby brother has finally caught up and finished the Disney Plus Mandalorian Season 2.
Stop talking about comic books or
what do you think
I'll
you're doing,
you.
Nerd?
Stop spending.
Get those nerds!
Geek.
I'm the Batman of geeks, bitch.
I did.
I think we're finally going
to
be able to...
But before we get to that, go watch Cobra Kai, because I just been watched all 10 episodes of Cobra Kai within, 24 hours, and season 3 is fantastic.
We have one more episode for you to talk about that next
week. I have other things.
Oh, okay.
So if you have to choose, Mandalorian.
All right. So my brothers have been bothering me to watch this as if I don't, A, have a life, and B, have better things to watch. I finally watched it, and I enjoyed it. So we're going to talk about it. If you haven't watched Mandalorian, it's been done for at least a month at this point. So go do that and skip like a minute ahead on the podcast.
It's going to be more than a minute, I feel, but yeah.
So what did you, so Ben, Jake and I were more Star Wars fans growing up. And I know you didn't hate Star Wars, but what did you feel about seeing Luke and R2 come back at the end of this?
Well, the TIE fighter shows up, not TIE fighter, TIE fighter X-Wing. The X-Wing shows up and they're like one solo X-Wing. And I just start crying because I knew what it was going to be. I was like, holy shit. But then I had a moment of being confused because I was like, when is this? I couldn't remember if this story took place between the second and third trilogy or if it was after the third trilogy. I was very confused. Well, I figured that out, obviously, with the black glove and the green lightsaber. And then I was like, well, are they just not going to take his head off? And then they did. And then it was Mark Hamill all computer generated. And I was just like, oh, my God. Also, I don't remember young Luke being that attractive. But I was like, okay, CGI, I'm into it. It was good. Overall, I thought I will do my recap and then you two can geek out a little bit more. Overall, I thought this season was fine. There were episodes this season I didn't care about. I thought the first season overall was stronger for me personally. But the like four of the last five episodes of this were like very, very strong. The ones that were more like consistent about the ongoing plot with the returning characters and that focused on Grogu. Lots of tears. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, well, watching this with Jake, I'm gonna go if that's all right. Watching this with my son, who is a huge Star Wars geek. More,
I think Toby might be more of a Star Wars fan than you and I ever were, and we were fanatics. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I kind of think he was actually disappointed. I think in the last episode, when Luke showed up, he was bummed that it was Luke and it wasn't like Ezra Bridger or it wasn't like Mace Windu or it wasn't one of these other characters. And then I think he realized that it was still cool that Luke showed up, but I think he was looking for something from one of the shows. He's watched all the Rebels episodes. He's watched all the Clone Wars episodes. He knows all these heroes. Like when the Dark Saber made its first appearance at the end of season one, he was geeking out so hard. Like I was like, okay, it's a lightsaber, dude. And then he's like telling me all the backstory and like, you know, the history of Mandalore and, you know, how it was taken from this and this. And I have a hard time as an adult watching animated series. I just don't have the time, for one, to sit down and watch cartoons. Like, you know, I wish I did.
We are not the same in that sense, but...
No, and I get that. And it I want to sit down and watch them. It's just, you know, by the time, you know, I get to have any time, it's like, you know, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning while everyone else is asleep, that I have an hour to watch something or it's super late. And so, you know, I need to sit down and watch those, but it's just finding the time to do that. But when it came on, I was excited. And
Interject real quick. I think they spent so much of the season paying homage to those characters that were built in the Clone Wars and the Rebels. So you had Bo-Katan, the Mandalorian. You had the Darksaber at the end of the last season. You had Ahsoka. You had all these things that I absolutely understand where Toby's coming from. Where like,
oh, I do too.
Where it was headed, it kind of felt like a continuation of those series. But then to pull it back with Luke, I mean, I think Luke fanserviced everybody. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I thought it had to be Luke, and I was not disappointed in the least. I thought it was awesome that how they tied everything together. I think you had Din who removes his mask so that his child can feel or see himself for real, you know, one more time before he leaves. You've got so many symmetrical relationships between like Luke blazing through, like, you know, you saw how hard it was for Mando and the team to stop one of these assassin bots, and Luke is shredding them like it's fucking nothing. And
right.
You know, it's like the mirror scene to Rogue One where Darth Vader, you know, is going through and just
going
destroying everybody.
Yeah.
And I just thought like the writing on this, the fan service was top notch. Like, you know, as a fan, it's like everything I wanted to see, you know, Star Wars post, you know, the original trilogy.
Until you saw the spaceship, like, I didn't think that was going to happen. And then, yeah, like the fact that it was so obvious, but also like out of nowhere.
Yeah. So we're sitting there watching, you know, Sarah, Noah, and I, and I have tried to quit Star Wars for years now, and The Mandalorian it keeps pulling me back in. So like the X-wing rounds the front of the building, and they see it through the cockpit of the main ship.
The ship.
It rounds the windows, and I'm like, oh, like audibly like, oh shit, and like looking at Sarah and Noah, I'm like, that's fucking Luke's X-wing. Like, giddy as a little schoolboy. And then you're not 100% sure until you see the glove, and then you see the green lightsaber. And I didn't even,
everybody's
like,
just
freaking out. And Aaron and I, you know, the three of us are huge geeks, and we like a lot of the same nerdy things, or we like to share the same kind of nerdy things with each other. And, you know, we'll text about things. Oh, hey, go check this movie out. Or did you watch this episode yet? Da, 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 da. But like immediately after it, Aaron and I are texting back and forth, like all of these, like, oh, did you notice this part? Did you notice that part? And like, that's just one of the great things about sharing a geek interest like that. And something as big as Star Wars, like, millions of people had that same reaction during that episode, and that's really freaking cool.
No, one of the things I thought was really cool is later that night, the day it came out, after it's been out for a little bit, Mark Hamill tweeted, "So anything good on TV tonight?" And just as a, which I thought was so awesome, like, you know, and then it's like all these people like, "How did you keep that a secret?" And he's like, "It's been like a year," and he's had it all under wraps, and, you know, because he's pretty big on Twitter and stuff, if you haven't followed him. But it was pretty great, I think, to be like, you know, he knows what a deal it was, and I think that was some redemption for him as an actor, and as a character, to like portray, you know, who he was and what he knows what that means to the fans and the people that
for
like
redemption?
It.
Redemption? Does he have a bad thing going on? Is there something wrong with Mark Hamill?
Not with Mark Hamill, but people don't necessarily care for the way Luke was treated in the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, no, nothing wrong with Mark Hamill.
No, this was a, even though it was a brief moment, it was a chance for him to play Luke as everybody had wanted to see Luke come back as. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I actually, like, so Luke was awesome, but the moment that R2 rounds the corner behind him, I'm like, I can't believe they actually, you know, like, that kind of attention to detail is what makes Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni such good creators on this show. Like, they know the, you know, what is important to the Star Wars fans. Yes, you see Luke, but the fact that Luke is still with R2, they're still adventuring together, and that R2 is immediately the one that befriends Grogu. Like, he's what makes Grogu comfortable. One that puts the question in everybody's head, did R2 help Grogu escape the massacre at the Jedi Temple, and all these other kind of geek theories. But like, R2 was so skipped over and forgotten in the sequels that now, you know, it felt like Luke, it felt like R2. It was great storytelling for a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I thought so.
Cute.
Thank you.
This is a podcast about Batman.
Right. Yeah. So,
speaking of Mark Hamill, any other important portrayals of Mark Hamill? Any other characters he's done that we want to talk about?
Actually, a pretty decent segue.
Yeah, it was. So, well, I'll do the recap here. We read Detective Comics 671 through 673, and this takes us back into Gotham and. Also, a little foray into
Hollywood. Are we not talking about Santa Prisca this episode?
We are not. Thank God. We're not talking about Santa Prisco. We have our good friend, the Joker, back, who is sporting some fabulous hair, if I do say so, Ben.
It's a mullet or a rat tail mullet. I don't even know what it is.
I hope it's extensions. It's I hope he did it on purpose.
It's just the Joker. It doesn't matter. But he is back, and he wants to create a movie called The Death of Batman. And he is going through, like, the actual movie production process of sorts. And he is trying to get Batman to star in his feature film without Batman realizing he is starring in his feature film, which would be his demise. And it's all the interludes of how Joker goes about setting up a movie. So let's go ahead and get into that.
There was a lot going on in these books. I'd also like to point out that this is what happens. This is what Chuck Dixon does with the Batman book after the Trigger Twins. So Chuck Dixon is all over the place.
Yeah.
He needs to focus on his Robin book because that's a little more coherent. Did you guys enjoy this book? What did you guys think of this book?
Have we had reviews already? No, not reviews. I'll start.
I'll jump it off. So I put these three issues. These were on the cutting floor when I was making the Night Quest list. And then I was looking at what goes before them and what goes after them. I'm like, man, that's a lot of shithead JPV and crappy Catwoman issues. And then we got some stuff coming up after this. I'm like, I just want a fun romp with a rogues gallery member, and like, let's just see what Gotham looks like while JPV's there, and does it feel familiar with this new Batman and his, you know, his number one arch enemy. And I freaking love these three issues. I laughed out loud a couple times. I thought it was hilarious. Like, it feels like the script of an animated episode, right? Like, it's just,
well,
weird.
And also, Jake, it felt like a mix between an animated episode and the 66 TV show. With how cheesy and over the top Joker is, and he's making like movie posters. Like, I read the movie posters that he puts out. Did you read like all the little quotes and stuff on there?
Oh yeah, I want that hanging on my wall. That movie poster is, it's like a full page splash of a good movie billboard. It's great.
So yeah, I chose not to read every detail because I knew that you two would read them on air.
Well, the one I want to read is the Joker poster in here. It said that it was based on a psychotic obsession by the Joker is what the story is being told, which I was like, well, he's very self-aware of his own psychosis, which is good. And he kidnaps the movie executives that are trying to produce this, and he locks them up. And there's one guy who's like, oh, this will still be a great movie. And the other ones are like, do you not fucking understand that this dude locked us up and he's going to kill everyone?
He's like, no, we'll give you $10 million. It'll be great. Let's do this. Let's roll with it.
It was a consistent shtick. Like, that those characters showed up for only these three issues, but were like major players. And they were also like the critics, which were basically like,
oh,
Siskel and Ebert,
which is
yeah
funny.
They totally were Siskel, yeah, which is funny because that was pre that, and this was probably when Siskel and Ebert were in their prime, I mean, when this came out.
Well, it got super meta, and I want to read some of their quotes later on, I think, but so the whole plot is completely goofy, but I really like how we get to watch Joker's mind develop this, you know, he's putting all the pieces together, he's finding all the things, and then he's acting very Joker about it, like, oh, well, you know, nobody's behaving the way that I want them to, so I'll kill them and I'll bring in some new people, and that's awesome. And then when he realizes that he's no longer trying to kill the Batman that he wants to kill. This is a different Batman than his Batman. And he changes at that moment. And it's no longer this love story of Batman's death. It's now just like, oh, I'm just going to kill you because you annoy me. And I really like that. I'll just read the quotes from the poster.
Joker. No, don't. I'm trying to think of what I was going to say.
The death of Batman.
Oh, I know it does.
you'll believe a Batman can die. I give it 4 stars. Don't hit me again from Wham TV. I have to say this is the finest film of the year to date, or the Joker will kill my family. Gotham Gazette. You've got to see this movie. My life depends on it. From News Time. And a towering cinematic achievement. I'd say this even if I didn't have a blowtorch held to my feet.
Did you enjoy that, Jacob?
I did. It made me laugh.
I enjoyed the rubber crocodiles.
I really hope that Joker went and got, like, hair extensions so that he could have the Hollywood ponytail. when this little job is done and he's tired of it, he's just going to rip them out and go back. Like,
oh, my God. So one thing I was going to say, I agree that it felt like the cartoon and a bit of the 66. It felt a little relapsed from where Joker was going to me from some of the last really serious dark Joker that we've had.
Well, you missed his friend, the Scarecrow, Ben.
Yes, it's from the Scarecrow, but like we had the death of Robin and the shooting of Barbara Gordon and all this, and then in this, he only kills 2 people, and there's a lot of people that he like. Well, no, like I felt like I wrote down multiple times, like, when is the death toll going to start happening? Because he like threatens people but doesn't kill people. I'm like, maybe that's why the one producer guy isn't that worried, because he's not actually like as menacing as he could be. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very silly, but I was just like, I was more wrapped up in how freaking dumb Jean-Paul Valley is getting horny over some random girl he sees again. I was like, what is the consistency with him?
Well, I think Catwoman summed that up, that he's an undersexed psycho wackadoo or whatever she said.
Undersexed, scantimonious. Sanctimonious. Dear God, dolt. There you go.
This is a little while after Joker's been out of Arkham now, so he had the whole plot along with Scarecrow for, you know, the couple months of Nightfall, and JPV even comments, he's like, oh, well, I knew the Joker was still out and about, but I just wasn't going to be bothered with him. And so, like, this is maybe Joker being a little bit bored, and he's like, oh, well, I'm going to come up with this real big harebrained. It's not like he has to immediately come out and make a big scene. It's kind of a... I don't know. Even to him, it seems a little silly. And I think he knows that it's silly when he gets caught at the end. He's like, okay, well, you caught me. Put me back in Arkham. Knock, 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 knock. And...
Well, and JPV almost crosses the line, which with the Joker is a no-no line that you can't cross. You can't kill the Joker. So, you know, and the Joker obviously doesn't go back to Arkham. He like escapes out of the back of the ambulance as he rolls down the street on a gurney.
Yeah. So what was the point of that? So is Bruce going to have to deal with him when Bruce gets back? Like, it just, I don't know. It seemed very funny and not really like continuity, and almost like it was designed to just be another moment of like, oh, look, another big A-list character doesn't respect or care about Jean-Paul Valley as Batman, was what it felt like, which I'm into that. So I liked it. I feel like it was like not standalone, but like a random little look into what was going on. A fun look. But.
Yeah.
What I think when you have a new Batman, and you know, JPV, well, it's obviously we've talked about it. He has a limited time in the suit, right? And so you have
And he's a Batman, Jake, for those with a short attention span.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're gonna get to those quotes. Don't worry, Aaron.
So meta.
Don't worry, we'll get there. You have to see how he plays with and reacts with the Joker, right? Like, you have to have. You know, Catwoman nowadays would be required, and I think it's because of these 90s stories that she became that. But you have to see how a new Batman would work with a Robin, how they would work with a love interest, and how they'd work with the Joker. And like, it's important. And the fact that we've had some, you know, we skipped over a lot of issues that had really shitty villains. You know, we had Tad and Tom, Trigger Twins. There were some new assassins.
No, you said cyborgs. Shitty villains.
Yes, I did. I did. And I'll say it again. Shitty villains like the Trigger Twins.
Aww. Poor Trigger Twins.
There's,
oh, they were so nice.
There's one issue with Mr. Freeze that we skipped over, but it doesn't do anything except it doesn't progress anybody's stories. And this didn't either, but I felt like if you're going to pick...
Oh, I got a question about that, Jake. Hang on. What killed the dinosaurs?
The Ice Age.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Oh my god. Yes, if you're going to have a random villain, it should be the A-list random villain and get his perspective on JTV. Absolutely. You mentioned Robin a minute ago, and you also mentioned love interest. Let's talk about Robin's take in this book. So John Paul Valley meets this girl and saves this girl, and then Joker ends up disguising her. It truly doesn't matter, Aaron. He disguises her as Robin and throws her out a window to the extent where that is actually the cover of the next issue.
Yeah.
Is this Robin person with her face clearly disguised and their chest clearly up out of view, falling with like one boot off. And I'm like, what is this? What is happening? And then at the end of the book, we find out that Cindy is none other than an actress who just walks away. And he's like, oh, no, she doesn't love me either. And I'm like, dude, your priorities are as jacked as Bruce's are. Yeah. These writers were some horny, horny men.
Yeah. JPV's balls are as blue as his cape at this point after dealing with Catwoman.
But, like, that woman that was working for the actress, like, she shouldn't get away. Like, she was doing bad things. Like, these people were all... Everyone that worked on this movie was bad. Other than the guy that was tied up against his will being like, we shouldn't be doing this.
Well, I think the Joker just wanted to make a really good film. I mean... he wanted to get the most from his actors. And, you know, I mean... Yeah, I think that last episode, the last issue where he's tied up or JPV's captured, and it was I thought it was very much like the 66 show setup, like, what's going to happen? John Paul Valley is now tied up, and the Joker has him ready for the blah, 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 same bat time, same bat channel kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, same system, same Saint Dumas, something like that, I don't know, so...
Well, there's a giant, like, piano that people are tied up to that,
all the movie props.
Leading up. If you step on the wrong key, I was like, this is very intricate. I also feel like there were some plot holes of, like, I don't know. We didn't get a lot of the background to where all these costumed actors were running around from. I did like that JPV references the costume baddies, like the movie monster people. He references them as just being in a costume. And then he's like, I'm not in a costume. I am Batman. I'm like, oh, kid, no, you're wrong. You're in a costume.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm Batman. Yeah, that's about it.
So, yeah, so we've hinted at the meta reviews from our unnamed Siskel and Ebert in this. And they have two moments where they just... are reviewing Joker's art film. And it's basically just the context is all just about, like, Batman, right? And Batman in general. And the first one is them praising, oh, this new direction that you're taking and why you have to change things up and why this new Batman in this new costume is going to be interesting. And I thought both of those two little blurbs were hilarious.
Because it's referencing the comic and about how it's the 90s now, so you have to, like, get with the times, and, yeah.
A Batman for those with a short attention span.
Yeah. But then at the end of it, in the final issue, before Joker, well, so their reviews are all about how the movie has lost direction, that it's a rambling mess, that it's lost its momentum.
that it's
strayed, and it's the first act was strong, but it's followed by a bunch of random images, and I'm like, is this just Chuck Dixon commenting on the Nightfall storyline in general? Like,
it could be.
Well, he wrote half of it.
Yeah. Well, he's got a sense of humor, I think. So.
I think so. I think, I mean, it's like, man, we really hit the ball out of the park the first time, but this Knight's Quest shit is just a mess. Like,
yeah. Well, I think it also was kind of like sort of like make the, you know, not taking themselves seriously and calling things out. Like, John Paul didn't, JPV didn't show up for the bat signal, and Gordon and Montoya are standing around like, where is he? Oh, fuck, we're actually going to have to do police work now because he didn't show up?
I guess we'll go do it.
I guess we'll go do our jobs that the taxpayers are paying us to do. Yeah.
Jake, did you want to talk about the Sarah Essen scene?
Oh, yeah. So there is a few good moments for character development in here. And one of them, I think, is we talked about last week how, and then this week too, like how quickly once the Joker and Batman are in the same space together, Joker almost immediately recognizes that it's not the same person in the costume that he's right. familiar with, that he wants to play the game with, the same way that Catwoman was able to quickly decipher. And we've talked about how everybody can figure it out except Gordon. And there's a scene with Gordon and Sarah in the police headquarters where he's defending, well, maybe, you know, maybe everything that he went through has just changed. And I really want to believe that this is still my friend. And I just don't know why he's behaving the way that he is. And Sarah is like, you don't know or you don't want to know. And I think that defines Gordon's take on all this is he's in denial. Like, I think deep down, and in previous stories, we've talked about how intelligent Gordon can be. And I feel like in the 90s, they write Gordon as a giant buffoon. And, you know.
No, he's a buffoon in these, yeah.
That's a shame to his character. But I feel like there is an undernote in those moments where he does know, and he's struggling with the loss of his friend, and he's hoping and praying that he's wrong. To a fault, I think. Everybody around him is telling him that, you know, this guy, you know, he already wasn't somebody you should be dealing with, and now he's going further and further and cutting you out more and more, and this isn't your friend. And he's like, no, you know, he just, yeah. So I like that a lot.
He doesn't want to lose the faith.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't lose the faith.
And it's, I think we're going to have to find out like how far can Gordon's trust in this person actually be pushed, and, you know, what would it do to the Batman Gordon relationship if Bruce ever returns, and, you know, can that trust ever be gained back?
If he ever returns. I hope Gordon locks John Paul Vialli up and loses the key, because I have gotten more than my fill. Unlike him, who hasn't filled anything, and that's half his problem.
Oh. So I wanted to ask you guys a question. So, Aaron, you mentioned while we were reading that at the end of the three issues, when Joker is like, okay, well, take me back to Arkham, JPV doesn't seem like he's going to. He's like, no, I'm going to end your reign of terror now. And he's beaten on him, and he breaks his arm a couple times. Do you guys think at this point that the system, that the new Batman would have killed Joker? He's stopped by the cops, but do you think he would have gone that far?
I don't. I don't know if that's a weighted question or not. I think he obviously didn't, so no.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, right, it can only be told one way, right? Because that's the way that they decided for the character to go.
Well, and I feel like there would be some kind of, like, comic book code that would come crashing down if the Joker was in mortal harm. It would be like the artists and the writers would be, like, stricken down, be like, nope, can't do, does not compute. Does not fit with the system. No, you must not destroy the Joker. No.
Not willing to lose that character.
Yeah, I don't think you can lose him.
I feel like John Paul Vialli, like, I would have liked to see him go that extreme. Like, we saw, like, he almost killed Robin, and then we have
Well, I would have liked to have seen him go that extreme.
We haven't seen him like almost choke. If he was like killing thugs in alleyways, like if he was killing every bad person, then I would be like, oh my God, he's going to kill the Joker. Like I would have been there, but I didn't get to that level because right. I'm like, well, one, they're not going to kill the Joker. And two, we haven't seen him. We've seen him be like lustful and wackadoo, much less than actually right. like psychotic at this point for the yeah. last few issues.
No, I would agree.
Well, and they, for me, I felt like it wasn't quite the impact and the worry, you know, it hadn't built up to that point. Like they talk a lot about how brutal and sheer force and ferocity this Batman is when he fights and he actually, you know, he's shooting the shurikens and all that kind of stuff. But I, for years, have seen Batman break, you know, a pot dealer's arm in the alley and throw a batarang into somebody's forehead. And, like, the brutality that he's going to doesn't feel, could JPV be pushed to the point of killing the archenemy, like this mass murderer? Yes, I think that character could get to that point.
I think he could.
Have we
yeah.
seen a cruel?
We just didn't see it.
Yeah, we haven't seen a cruel version of this. But like, he has a little less humanity than the Bruce does. But I don't know that he's lost enough of that he's going to be a killer at this point.
I think he's a teenager. Like he's acting like a teenager. Like he's very emotion run. He's very narcissistic. Like last week with the Catwoman, we didn't really get into how he kept being like, I could beat her, but I let her get away. And I'm like, yeah, sure, you let her. And then with this one, he said something along the lines of that with the Joker. He's like, oh, I didn't go after the Joker because I wasn't worried as much as Bruce was. I was like, you're so full of yourself.
Yeah.
And then you like get in these situations and you're like, oh, well, maybe the Joker is a threat. It's like, no shit, kid. Like, of course he's a threat. He's the Joker.
Yeah. You know? I think he needs to let off some steam. He needs to find his Ariana Grande and just get it on.
Oh. Yeah. Who called him Bogus Man? Somebody referred to JPV as Bogus Man, and
I was looking at that, too, because I wrote that in my
I don't
note.
Remember. I didn't write that down.
I think it's Joker.
I don't know.
I think
probably was.
How he's they're talking about how he's not the counterpart to Joker anymore and that he should be known as Bogus Man or something like that.
Nice.
Well, you've talked about the different people supporting JPV. I do think it's interesting that after he does not kill the Joker, Bullock is like, maybe we should have waited a minute. And I'm like, well, yeah. Damn, Bullock. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, how many lives would have been saved? How many lives would be saved if they just waited just another minute to see what would happen?
How many storylines would we have missed out on, Ben?
I'm not saying they should. I am not Team Bullock there. I am just saying. Clearly, of all the people in Knight's Quest that I could relate to, it's going to be Harvey
it's
Bullock.
It's going to be Harvey donut-eating Bullock.
I do love a good donut.
Well, you know, who doesn't? Well, gentlemen, do you have anything else you want to add, or do you want to give your thumbs-up recommendation for this book?
But let me ask you something. What do you think of this? Say it's
all right. That was terrible. Right. Horrendous. I'm offended. I'm it's appalled. Right.
That was
awesome. Right.
Whoa, yes.
Yes.
No! Two thumbs up? I'll go first. It was very fun, but I was like, why? Like, it was so bonkers. It felt Elseworldsy. It's definitely worth reading, especially if you like the Joker. I'm glad we got Joker and JPV, but I'm also like ready to move on from JPV. So it wasn't essential by any means, but it was definitely fun.
Yeah, that's good. I thought it was fun. I'd give it two thumbs up on the Joker movie review scale. I like Joker. That's not a secret. And I think the making of the movie, it was just so goofy and over the top, but it was totally Joker. And we talked about Mark Hamill early in our Week in Geek. And I just, every time I read a Joker story now, it's with Mark Hamill's voice.
Sure.
And I think that yep. just adds to it. So I think, you know, JPV is he's crazy, and we've talked about that ad nauseum now. But I think Joker stories are just, they're fun. When I saw it was a Joker story, I was like, oh, you know, I kind of sat up a little differently. I took notes a little differently. I was just kind of more into it just because, you know, I think those are fun stories.
Yeah.
Especially compared to what Jake's had us reading, right, Aaron?
Right, Ben. Yeah, especially, yeah.
Well, I feel like a great Joker story deserves a few issues. And so, like, he's not a one-issue villain. I love, you know, 3 issues feels like a great time to spend with the Joker and get into his wackadoo scheme. I enjoyed these a lot. I thought they were a lot of fun. I have struggled to find the important points of Knight's Quest past, like, what Bruce is doing, you know, other than kicking Robin out and just being an all-around dickhead. There's not a lot going on with JPV. So if you wanted to dabble in Knight's Quest, I'd actually say read the first little bit where he fires Robin. Maybe read this because it gives you JPV's interaction with the cops, a major Rogues Gallery member, his messed up brain with Saint Dumas. It kind of gives you a little bit of everything that's going on wrapped up in a fun, goofy, animated 66 style Batman and Joker story. So I liked it.
Sounds
a lot.
Good. What's next, Jake?
Well, we are
actually that's my question. Da-da-da. Right?
Oh, great.
Yep.
So, general listeners, the last couple of seasons, we've switched from Ben having Elseworlds to Ben having Benworlds, which means we're reading things that are in DC continuity that don't necessarily have to happen in this podcast. But I thought it would be really fun if we read issues 3, 4, and 5 of the ongoing Robin series to see what he's up to in between the Knight's Quest stories.
He's waiting by the phone for Alfred to call and do updates. That's all we need to know.
Well, and dear listeners, if you normally skip through the Ben's World picks, because I would if I was listening. But
oh my god,
this one actually
good this time.
This one actually is exactly where it would be if I had made the list. I just had put these on the cutting floors.
Yeah, and I picked them up and did a better job.
And forced them down everybody's throat.
Well,
what we learn, Aaron.
It's that time again.
To do another one of our cute little skits?
No, it's time to learn the day's lesson. And to find out what it is, we turn to the Wheel of
Batman.
Wheel of Batman. Turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
I need your help on this, Ben. Pick a number, 3 or 5.
5, 5.
Well, gentlemen, we learn JPV's balls are as blue as his cape.
Well, what's 3?
What's 3?
What's 3?
This podcast is based on a psychotic obsession of Jake.
That's fair.
Yeah.
All right. For the Brotherhood of Batman, I am Ben, your sunshine in Gotham. Tune in next week to hear me talk a lot.
I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. I'll clean this up. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Jake. I'm the middle brother. I did not write or pick the next week's books.
Bye.
Hopes have been his plans. This city's way.